Well, once again, good morning. And thanks to everybody who's made just the transition real smooth with the projector and everything. So Dan and Jeff and Jake and Daniel, thank you for the lights and everything. Just appreciate just making us feel at home and making things go smooth. We want to start by just thanking the church for your support. The Work Study Scholarship, as I mentioned in Sunday School, is a powerful thing for us. There's no way I could take enough time to thank you for it, but it enables our students to work and to earn money for their room, board, and tuition. And the extra blessing was our students haven't been able to leave campus for a long time. Well, they have, but during that first year, it was very difficult. So thank you very much. And I'd just like to have a word of prayer before we start to move forward with our update. Well, Lord, thank you again for this opportunity to share, the privilege, the opportunity to share the Peru ministry. Thank you so much for that. Please continue to go before the folks here at Westwood Heights Baptist Church and their faithfulness to so many things, and I especially think of missions. We love you, Lord, and thank you for this time. In your son's name, amen. Okay, some of this will be a repeat. Those of you that were in Sunday school, I'll try to keep those things a little bit briefer. But I wanted to give you a quick recap from last year at the seminary. So thinking back to, let's go back to March of 2020. That's when COVID hit us, and of course it hit the world, and it's caused some dramatic changes throughout the world. But we were fortunate to be able to keep teaching at that time. So back in 2020, in March, when our classes started, things hit. And our students were confined to the seminary grounds for all those months from March until October, which should have been March to December first week. But they cut back graduation from December, first week of December to October, because our students stayed on campus and they were able to get more done because they went to school longer. And plus, everybody, I'm sure, was eager to get home at that time because they were not allowed to leave the campus. So there was just tremendous blessing. We had missionaries on campus, staff on campus that could do some teaching, and then the rest was by Zoom. And as I've said many times, but I want to say it again, the Healthy Work Study Scholarship enabled our students to stay on campus, work, and they could take care of their financial responsibilities. We did not return because of COVID, because of COVID situation in the airlines and in Peru. We did not return to Peru this year. So we are doing the teaching. I'm still doing the teaching of the responsibilities that I would have down there. And this is the fourth module. A module is 3 weeks long. They take one class at a time, so you've got their attention, and they get your attention too. So they have one class. That's all the homework they get, and I kind of like that. They don't have three, four, five, or six classes to worry about, and it really goes well. It goes fast. But this is the fourth module. It's Biology 1. And as I mentioned in Sunday school, I also taught this year Baptist Church History, Acts, and Revelation. Every other year, I've been teaching Biology 2 and the Book of Daniel. So that's kind of where things are at. There's been one additional thing that I want to mention. I know it's a little hard to see, but this gentleman right here, if I can find him, I know, kind of hard to see, but he's the dean of our studies, Pastor Pedersey. Now, next to him is Sam. Some of you know Sam Rojas and his wife Beth and their kids. There's Rachel Tarvin. So some of you would have familiarity with them. But the reason I wanted to point out Pastor Pedersey is he's asked me and kind of given me the charge to create a missions class that is a standalone missions class. At our seminary, we have always taught missions. I think the title of the class would be Missions According to the Book of Acts. And so we study the Book of Acts and do the best we can of making missionary applications. And there are numerous, as you well know. But there's also things that you can't get to when you want to study missions because, you know, you got to get through the Paul's missionary journeys and his time in Rome and so on. And we just haven't had time to study some of the great missionaries and learn things from those people. So his suggestion to to start a missiology class, a study of missions class, I agree with 100%. But it's going to create some, you know, it creates some extra work and something that I've been looking forward to. I've been doing, and I'm excited about it. It's just that I want to do it right, so I'm doing a lot of different readings about things, and that's what's bringing me to what I'm going to say today. Basically, you're going to get a Peru update a little bit, what's going on campus, and if you have any questions, I hope you would ask them. But I'm also going to share some things that kind of new to me, some facts about modern missions that kind of caught me off guard a little bit, and you know, you kind of rethink some things and you reevaluate a little bit of the kind of your approach to mission. So I want to share some of those things with you. Then in doing that class, I have to, of course, I got to do it in English. I'm not proficient enough in Spanish to do that kind of thing. And so there's an individual, his name is Marco, and I shared quite a bit about him in the Sunday school, and I just want to show a quick picture of Marco. And I'm not going to say the whole long story about Marco, but good, the Lord's got a hold of that young man's heart. He's extremely bright. He preaches. He wants to serve the Lord. He's got the degree to become an attorney, a lawyer, but the Lord got a hold of his heart and brought him to our seminary, and we are absolutely blessed. And Wendy and I are absolutely double blessed. He's a neat guy, and he's a hard worker, extremely conscientious, and loves the Lord. Now, as we move forward, I want to share some things about the book of Acts as we lead into talking about missions. And in Sunday school, we talked basically about Acts 20, 17 through 38. And I wanted to make the point about Paul, the pastor, because sometimes we think of him as Paul the evangelist, and he comes across a little bit on the hard side and maybe too bold. I'm not sure how he comes across in your opinion exactly, but he was just an outstanding evangelist, but he was also just an outstanding pastor. And we're going to, in this new class, I want to try to hit on things that our students may not be real familiar with out in the world of missions, and maybe kind of broaden their perspective and broaden their scope. You know, at our seminary, we do a good job. I'm really, proud, that's not the good word, but I'm really feel blessed and fortunate to be a part of it. And we teach good doctrine. I mean, we have survey classes, we have systematic theology classes, you know, we have evangelism and discipleship classes. But I really think the Lord prompted Pastor Percy at this time to create this missions class because, like I said, I think we're doing a good job. We're seeing churches started. Young men are going out and starting churches, and we're excited about that all throughout Peru. But I think we can be more intentional. I think we can be more proactive with this class on missions. And so it's got my attention. It's got my, you know, my thought processes going. And I really am looking forward to putting this thing together and having them read about different missionaries and have them read about different places where there are unreached people groups and so on. This, for those of you that enjoy biographies of missionaries, there's wonderful readings out there, but this saying, which is simple but very powerful by William Carey, it's a quote that just kind of, he's called the father of modern missions, and he's the bright and morning star of missions, as some people call him. But expect great things from God, attempt great things for God. I think that's going to kind of be our motto. It's something that I think I'm going to try to highlight and make it a very important part of this class. But in learning about missions myself and trying to, you know, work my way through a whole bunch of different things, it became clear to me there's a difference between the word mission and the word missions. Now, if you interchange them, I don't think there's any harm in that. But when you get to the teaching perspective and you want to kind of really nail down the difference and make a point with your students, then I'll take some time to do that. But there is a difference between mission and missions. And basically, it boils down to this without trying to get overly wordy. The word mission, singular, it comes from the Latin, which means missio Dei, which basically is God's mission. It gets translated God's mission. And it actually refers to God's plan of salvation for us. And so when we think of mission, we should think of God's plan of redemption to save the world, and it's His initiative. And if we keep that in mind, I think we keep things in a little better perspective, because I got a feeling some groups have gotten out of perspective with the missions, because it becomes more of this, it's the group doing their thing and planning strategies and doing this and that, and they forget the most important part of what missions is, and it's that it's God. It's God's mission to save the world. It's not to try to have the fanciest website or to, you know, collect the most money to be able to do this or that. It's winning people to the Lord Jesus Christ. And it's always about Him. And we got to be careful it doesn't become about us or about our ideas or about our strategies. We know from Matthew 28, 18 through 20, probably the most familiar Great Commission scripture that there is. But don't stop there. And when you have opportunities to teach, you can, you know, take time to really dig into these verses. But Matthew 28, 16 through 17, Mark 16, 15 and 16, Luke 24, 47, Acts 1, 4 through 9. These are all wonderful, Great Commission verses. And they complement each other. And so, you know, don't stop at just 28, 18 through 20 from Matthew's, because you get insights from these other verses. And John 20, 21. I don't want to say my favorite or the best, but here's what it says. John 20, 21. So Jesus said to them again, "Peace to you, as the Father has sent me, so I send you." So as the apostles made disciples, disciples made disciples down through the centuries, and it's gotten to us. And we're, at this point, the end of the line of the disciples. Now, I know that the old's about preaching to the choir and all that sort of stuff, but you and I should be making disciples. That's what we should be doing. And your church is intimately involved in missions. You send out missionaries. You support missionaries. You do a lot. And if you can't, you know, if you're not involved in actually going, then you help. You do what you can do. But we live in an exciting time with missions. Yeah, you may want to say exciting and difficult time, or you may want to say exciting, difficult, and something else. You know, that there may be other words, but it's an exciting time. It's a challenging time for missions right now. And so God's mission is to save people. Missions, with the S, is what you and I can do. Whatever that role that God wants us to play, that's what we can do. The world is changing. I mean, it's changing right in front of our very eyes. We are living history that in 20 years from now, we're going to look back and say, that's when that happened? And why didn't, you know, I don't want to say things like, you know, why didn't we stop it, or why couldn't we do something about it, and so on. But history is happening here that it's having inroads. And we need to be diligent. We need to be diligent with what we can do for missions. And so there's challenges before us, not insurmountable challenges, but there's the unfinished task of missions is there. And one of the guys that I have been reading quite a bit is by the guy by the name of John Piper. Now, he's the pastor up at Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis. He's a little bit on the Reform side. And he's got, from some people's perspectives, pluses and minuses, but the man loves missions, and he writes prolifically. And if you want to read about missions and learn some things, read some of his things. He causes you to stop and think and evaluate if, you know, what you could do better with missions. But in reading some of his things, he says we're in a third era. You know, and that was a new thing to me. Third era. What does he mean by a third era? And this is what it was. And this is how he explained it. He started out with William Carey. He goes on to say, tells us a little bit about William Carey. He's a pioneer missionary to India, was the morning star of modern missions, oftentimes called the father of modern missions. His famous quote is up there. And this person, according to John Piper, kind of triggered a lot of things because he did things maybe other people were doing, but was not intentional. It was not conscious. So there were other missionaries that came after William Carey, notably Hudson Taylor, missionary to China, David Livingston, the trailblazing missionary to Africa, Adoniram Judson to Burma, Myanmar today. He was there for 40 years, that guy. He knew languages, you know, Greek, Hebrew, and many other languages, translated the Bible into different dialects. So Piper's saying this, because he thought back to those missionaries, and he put this together. So from about 1793 to 1865, there was a missionary movement that was new to the world, at least new in the broad-based sense that people were consciously saying, let's do it this way, or let's go these places. And so the goal, whether it was the initial goal or whether we look back at it in history, the goal that was accomplished is that every coastland in the world was reached. You know, you think of, you know, the coastland of Africa and the coastland of South America. All the coastlands were reached with missions. There were missionaries there, evangelical missionaries, doing their missionary thing as best they could. Some did it better than others and so on. And so getting to the coastlands was John Piper's idea of the first era. So, you know, the first order of business. Then in 1865, Hudson Taylor kind of learning some things from William Carey, he started to move basically inward. And his goal, consciously or not, because other missionaries followed him, they went to all the geographic countries of the world were reached with the gospel, inland things. And that's where Baptist Mid-Missions gets its name from, the fact that it went to the mid-continents. Its goal was to go not to the coastlines, but to the middle. And Baptist Mid-Missions is pretty old, and really it's over 100 years old. And it was part of this. It was part of this thrust to not just take it to the coastlands, but to take it inland from there. And so in this second era, the inlands were reached. Now, then in 1934, a person by the name of Cameron Townsend, some of you may know he was with Wycliffe, started Wycliffe Bible Translators, and all that they do, they've translated the Bible into so many different languages and dialects that it's extremely impressive. But this was the big change, according to Piper. And I could see what he's saying, and I want to get some other people's opinions on this too. But the change was, instead of trying to get to geographic areas, you know, the coastland and the inland, we're gonna get more intentional. We're gonna look at things like, you know, Revelation 5:9 and Revelation 7:9, where it talks about every tribe and tongue and people and nation stood before the throne of God and worshiped him. You know, it wasn't everybody from Western Africa and everybody from Somali. They started to think in terms of people groups. And that's not easy to define, and I'm not going to be able to do that. But the approach in the third era, which you and I are a part of, is to reach the people groups. There's, if you Google a thing called the Joshua Project, I just kind of got on that. It's an amazing thing. I mean, it's like endless information. But it's excitingly endless information that, I mentioned this. Our oldest daughter, April, she's a missionary to Costa Rica. And she gets excited about missions in her own little way. She's not real, you know, she doesn't get up and rant and rave, but boy, she gets behind the scenes and she can get excited. And she was telling me she was a part of teaching this perspectives class in Costa Rica. And the perspectives class there was an opportunity to get business people to come in and kind of teach them about missions so that they can send their business partners overseas and spread the gospel message as they get involved. Costa Ricans can get into countries that Americans cannot. It's just a really interesting concept. People like Costa Ricans, Costa Ricans. And Costa Ricans can go places and do things that Americans are, everybody's looking at them and follow them. Whereas a Costa Rican, they can do things and they can witness. And somehow they kind of, you know, they're not seen as being dangerous or being harmful. But she was teaching this class, and she was telling me, she's the one who told me about the Joshua Project, and she said, you know, Dad, one of the things that I do in this perspectives class, and I'm thinking, oh, man, this is kind of stuff I like. She said, there are something like, and I don't have the exact numbers, like 7,000 unreached people groups. And you can go to the Joshua Project, and you can get that list, and you can print it off on paper. And she did that. And she printed them off on paper like this, you know, just regular things. And I know it was a lot of printing, but she had this list, and then she rolled it up, and she rolls it. She said, this is what I do. I roll it up like a scroll, and then at some point in class, you know, we're talking about unreached people groups. And she goes, and I take it, and I unroll it. And the thing goes way out there, and then somebody unrolls it. You know, and then that starts quite a discussion about people groups and how many are still unreached, and the job that's ahead of us in missions is to get the word out to those people groups. And that's what Piper's talking about, the third era. Those are all the unreached people groups, and those are going to be the groups that are going to be in heaven worshiping before the throne of God. And we have the responsibility. And I don't claim to understand, you know, whether we're going to reach them all before the tribulation. As you know, the book of Revelation talks about the angel of God goes out and spreads forth the gospel message. Now, maybe that's how every unreached people group gets touched. I don't know. But until we find out, our job is to do all we can to get out there and reach these groups. Now, however exactly that plays itself out in your life, in the life of a church, I don't know, because it varies. And then he goes on, Piper, then he goes on to talk about the great reality. You know, that was another new thing to me. What is this? What is the great reality? And I just have the curious mind. I wanted to know about, what's this great reality about missions? And so there's a book by Phillips Jenkins called The Next Christendom that talks about the center of gravity of missions is moving away from Europe and the United States, and it's moving to the south, and it's moving to the east. Now, you know, those are things that you think about, and I kind of had an awareness of it, but it wasn't like it was a formal presentation to me, because I knew it was happening. I knew the United States, and I knew Canada for sure. We used to live outside of Buffalo and close to Canada, so we know Canada a little bit. We're losing our oomph. We're losing our impact throughout the world. But anyways, places that were once considered mission fields, think about them. You know, Africa. And some of you know the work that's going on in Africa, obviously. And they have become major missionary sending forces in the world. Most of the global church is now in the majority world, majority population. Latin America, Africa, and Asia, that is where most of the global church is, just numerically. I'm not saying, you know, financially or anything like that. What was once an endeavor, and everybody used to say this, once was an endeavor largely from the West to the rest. That was a motto that you learned early on in missions. What was once an endeavor largely from West to the rest has drastically changed. And in now admissions, we use the phrase, well, it's become a new, I haven't been using it, but it's a phrase that it's from everywhere to everywhere. It's from Costa Rica to the world. It's not just from the States to the world. And it should be, I think, from Peru to the world. And it's certainly not yet. Now, the U.S. is still the country that sends the most evangelical missionaries. But here's an interesting fact that Brazil has supplanted South Korea for number two in the number of missionaries. I don't have the exact numbers with me, but Brazil is second in the world in sending out evangelical missionaries. South Korea is second. Other notable senders of evangelical missionaries are South Africa, India, and the Philippines. I knew that Philippines, years ago, we had the privilege of going to Cambodia, and there were Filipino missionaries all over the place in Cambodia. They were out and about doing the work. And so what we're finding out is, as these dynamics change, those of us that are involved in contemporary Christian missions, you know, it's just, you need to be aware of that. We need to know that. whether it's where your church focuses on sending people the 1040 window, or you know, however, you got to be mindful of some of those things, because I think it can help you be more efficient or efficacious, you know, or effective with how you use your money and where people go. But here are some interesting quotes that come from this book by Philip Jenkins, the new Christendom that I wanted to share. And each one just kind of causes you to pause and to think and to say, whoa, that is... He's trying to point out there's a new shape of Christianity. And we don't always understand that new shape. We're Americans, and sometimes we think we have all the answers and we do everything. And in the history of missions, maybe that, you know, at one point it was true. We did most of it. But it's not true now. I mean, there's too many other things going on. I've seen too many good churches, you know, in the little hills of Peru that are preaching God's message and getting out into their community and going door to door. There are things going on that just are just so neat to see. And I think we need to know that, the general churches, the churches in America. But here's some things. Active Christian adherence has become stronger in Africa than in Europe. You know, now I'm not saying, you know, that's a 100% accurate statement, but this was a quote from this person, Philip Jenkins, who did research. And I know there's some churches in Peru that are a whole lot more faithful than churches in the States. I know that for a fact. And I know there's churches in Africa that are a whole lot more faithful in serving the Lord than there are churches in the States. Just the preaching that comes from the pulpit is a whole much more accurate than you get in some of the... And I could name different denominations, and you guys would go, oh, geez, you know, you're right. Those churches don't even preach the gospel. But it's happening. The number of practicing Christians in China is approaching the number in the United States. Now, I know China has a whole lot more people than we do. But the point is, I think, maybe practicing Christians. In the United States, I have a feeling the number of practicing Christians is going down, sadly. Here's another one. Live bodies in church are far more numerous in Kenya than in Canada. You know, I would like to follow that up and get some statistics, but according to Philip Jenkins, live bodies in churches are far more numerous in Kenya than in Canada. That's a sad state of affairs. I know Canada is very liberal and all that sort of stuff, but wow. More believers worship together in church Sunday by Sunday in a place called Nagaland, which is a state, is like a state in northeast India, than in Norway. Now, I don't know, once again, if that surprises you or not, but, you know, Norway kind of being a modern country, but once again, those of you that maybe follow that, they're pretty liberal. And so you get very little more believers that worship together on Sunday in Nagaland, India, than do in Norway. More Christian workers from Brazil are active in cross-cultural ministry outside their homelands than from Britain or Canada. And I kind of made that point. So the point is, Brazil is sending out more missionaries than Canada or Great Britain. The Church of England, the Anglican Church, is about as lukewarm as the church at Laodicea. The things I read about that and what people say and missionaries over there, it's as lukewarm as you can get. He goes on to say this. Last Sunday, more Christian believers attended church in China than all of the so-called Christian Europe. This past Sunday, more Anglicans attended church in each of Kenya, South Africa, Tanzania, and Uganda than did Anglicans in Britain and Canada. And the church, the government church of England is the Church of England. The church, there's another quote in here from Scotland. Here it is. Last Sunday, more Presbyterians were in church in Ghana. More Presbyterians were in church in Ghana than in Scotland. And Presbyterian is the state church of Scotland. It's like, it's hard to even fathom that. This past week in Great Britain, at least 15,000 Christian foreign missionaries were hard at work evangelizing the locals. This past week in Great Britain, at least 15,000 Christian foreign missionaries were hard at work evangelizing the locals. Most of these missionaries are from Africa and Asia, and they're going to Great Britain. In a word, the author says this: the Christian church has experienced a larger geographical redistribution in the last 50 years than in any other comparable period in the history, with the exception of the very earliest years when the church just started. And then just some final thoughts before we turn to Peru. What exactly all this means to missions remains to be seen. But we know that the United States is no longer the dynamic leading Christian nation it used to be. Maybe God has prepared the world for our decline by having others grow in their love and work for missions. I wish I knew the answer, but those are some of the things that are going on out there. Now, just some quick slides, and if you would like to ask questions about Peru, please do that. It'll just make it just a little bit smoother, a little bit better. But that's our congregation. Now, somebody noted apparently the young ladies are into the mass and the guys aren't. So I don't know why that was like that, but it came out that way. But that's our student body. They like to dress up, the Peruvian students. They like to look sharp. They like to wear ties and dresses. This is our first year students. One of the things that we were really, really concerned about was back in 2020, from March to October, our students were on campus and they studied and it was great. And then they went home. They went home November, December, January, February, and then came back end of February, 1st of March, a little bit, you know, about 2 months longer than they normally would have had for their break. We didn't know if we were going to get them back, because they went home and there was going to be a lot of pressure on them to stay home to help with the finances and to do this on they don't have big farms, but they have, you know, little, well, maybe like big gardens, but they needed to help around the house, so to speak. And so that was a big, big concern, and lots of prayer was lifted up. But we put some strategies, if you will, into play, and we tried to help them figure things out. And we got all our students back, plus 6 students. And to us, I don't know if that comes across to you, but we're very excited to see that. Very excited to see that. Now, I passed around in Sunday school, and if some of you want to see this after, you're welcome. But we get updates from the embassy, the U.S. Embassy in Peru, and they tell us about this and that and what the new rules and what the president said and what we have to do. And that's what this says. Basically, it says Cusco, Anta, La Convencion, and Quispicanchi, different place. There's Utabamba, that's where we live. It's at a level, nivel means level, it's at an extreme level, and that's a dangerous thing. That's the government sees that as dangerous, and so they put all these different restrictions on you. And during those restrictions, some of the missionaries got really creative in some of the things they were doing. This shows... I know it's hard to see, but we'll make the point. There's Rachel, and our students were out and about doing things. And they were passing out food, passing out tracts. They were witnessing with their masks on. And we weren't there at the time. We weren't there. But we got many reports of people coming to know the Lord as personal Savior. And it was exciting for our students to be a part of that. They were able to slip out, different times, not go real far. I hope they weren't bending the rules, but they did get out a little bit with the food distribution. Pardon? Okay, Pastor Sam. Yeah, there's a little better picture of Sam Rojas, that some of you know. Not a whole lot better, but there's Pastor Sam out working. They're going to be on furlough and in the States a little bit. Mask and shield. You guys know Rusty. This is Rusty. And... he sent us this picture, or it was on Facebook. I'm not sure if it came to us specifically, but he's in a place called Pucallpa. It's about 6 hours from where we are. It's a jungle. It's really hot. And Rusty was telling us they have to wear it to get into the grocery store. This was about 2.5-3 weeks ago, so it could have changed. But they had to wear a mask and, of course, the shield. This is what we talked about, getting creative. And this is where Tim and Barb Watley are. This is Rolando Arias in a place called Kiteni. And Rolando works with Tim and Barb, and they have a joint ministry. And I'm not sure how it all started, but they had the novel idea of preaching from on top of the church. About every building in Peru is unfinished. And I think I know why. Somebody told me one time. But this is unfinished. You can go out on a roof and you can hang up your clothes and you can yell to your neighbors and get a suntan, I guess, if you want. But they were up on the top of the church and they were preaching. They set up the microphone, have music, get people's attention, and then they preached. And they have some neat stories of people, you know, looking out their windows and sitting up on top of their, you know, unfinished roof and all that sort of thing. But that was pretty creative. This is a graduate of our seminary, Juan Quispe Quispe, and he's doing it virtual. There's a good picture of Pastor Percy, our Dean of Studies. And he's the pastor at Calvary Baptist Church in Cusco. And he's pretty savvy when it comes to the technology. And him and his daughter and his family, they did a lot of really neat Sunday school and sign language ministry, preaching through WhatsApp. This is a couple more examples. That young lady in upper left, she's a wonderful gal that graduated from her seminary, Maritza. She's down in a place called Puerto Maldonado, and she's serving the Lord, teaching Sunday school there, and with a missionary, with Buddy and Lorraine Fitzgerald in Puerto Maldonado. And so she's doing it virtual too. So just to kind of show you that's going on, and things doesn't come to a dead stop, the church has kept finding ways to get the word out. And that's Rachel. I don't know if some of you may know Rachel. She's a single missionary that we worked really close with, and we still do, down on the campus. Okay, now here's our chapel. And they're having a... This is a lead-in, I think, to the missions conference. But we have chapel every day from 8 till 9. And this is the way they sit. And, you know, they do the proper social spacing and all that sort of thing. But that kind of shows you our chapel. Another picture up there. Then it was an online missions conference, and someone from the States was talking missions and was going through the... We have a spiritual emphasis week, and a week before classes start, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there's a spiritual emphasis. This year it's missions. We rotate between creation, we rotate missions. We have things like, counseling, some responsibility, integrity. We have different themes throughout the year that our students will hear lots of sermons on, and there'll be extra activities based on that. So this year it's missions. And just me, obviously, in the living room, teaching an online course, not sure which one that is. Okay, this is the kind of fun stuff that's going on down at the other end in my class. These are the third and fourth year students. They're working, it was the class in Revelation this year, and one of the assignments they have is to make a timeline of the book of Revelation. And, you know, the seven-year tribulation, the rapture, and the second coming, and just lots of different events that take place. But trying to keep it all straight can be a little bit on the challenging side. And so I ask them to do this timeline. And they usually do a really good job. And that's Marco. He's taking a selfie. He's a very capable selfie taker. And these are really good timelines. And, of course, those are our students. Okay. Now, any questions about our student body or any questions about our students? As I continue to go through here, I'm talking up a storm. Anybody? Yeah, Dan, thank you.
Yeah. How many graduates are there now?
Oh, that's a really good question. One I would say, I don't know. But I could come pretty close. One of the things that we've done is we've put together a PowerPoint, and I hope to show that someday here, of graduates, recent graduates, in the last 10 or 15 years. We've been going since 2001. It was the first short-term trip that we went. And so we know people back from 2001, so about 20 years. and that have gone out and started churches. And, you know, we can think to students that we have and give their name and say they're in this community, in this community. So I could do a better job, to be honest with you, of naming students that have graduated, that have gone out and started churches or have invigorated churches that were kind of just hanging on by a thread and have done things and turned them around. But that would be interesting to try to figure out how many total graduates we have. And now, we didn't plan this, but your question kind of leads into the history of the seminary just a little bit. The seminary started in the early 90s, and it was a Quechua-only seminary. And it was a one-year Bible certificate. Now, Quechua is a whole different language. You know, I can get by with Spanish. I can't talk fast like this in Spanish, but I can do pretty good in Spanish, but I can do kind of like nil in Quechua. Quechua is like Aliamchu and Aliami. It's not a Latin-based language. It's just difficult. And in our missionaries, the good ones, you know, like Ken Lovell and Tim, and you know, those people all have a hard time with Quechua. It's not easy. But here's the point. The Incas, the indigenous people, the indigenous people of South America, kind of like our, you think of indigenous Indians, you know, the Cherokees and so on in the States. The Incas were, when the Spanish came over, they just wiped out the Incas. I mean, they took the gold, took the money, ran, and just, they wiped out almost all the Incas. Now, don't necessarily feel sorry for the Incas, because the Incas wiped out a couple smaller indigenous peoples too. They were really fierce warriors, but they couldn't fight against, you know, the Spaniards with their horses and the weapons they had. But anyways, the Incas, when they were close to getting wiped out, some of them took off. Literally, they headed to the hills. They went to the mountains, and they developed a culture up there that's what we call the Quechua people. Quechua are people who live in the mountains and were the ones that, over the years, about, you know, 50 years ago in Peru, they started to come out of the mountains and, you know, integrate into society. But they were the ones that were also given the phony money and taken advantage of, and because they just don't understand things. And missionaries, in particular one missionary, Tim Whatley's dad, Roberto, just, he really had the foresight. He bought property on the outskirts of Utabamba and started a seminary. And the Quechua people had, I don't want to know exactly how to say it, but they have an innate interest in things of God. I think because they were, you know, all these sun gods and everything, they were exposed to it. And so they wanted to, a lot of them wanted to learn about the real God, and they did. And so our seminary started for them. The descendants of the Incas, a one-year Bible certificate became a two-year Bible certificate somewhere around late 90s into the early 2000s. It kind of switched from Quechua, 50-50, Spanish, and then somewhere around 2007, 2008, no more Quechua, spoke at the, you know, or taught at the seminary, and now it's all Spanish. Most of our students are still Quechua. They have Quechua backgrounds, and they're bilingual in Quechua, but we don't teach in it. Because I know this may not sound like a good thing, but if they're going to function in the Peruvian culture, knowing Spanish is pretty important. And so that they do that. So our seminary, a little history of it there. And now it's all Spanish. It's a four-year degree. It's not accredited as we would say accreditation, but the students are proud of their four-year certificate because they work very hard for it. These are thank yous, and some of these thank yous are to you because of your support of the Work-Study Scholarship. We tell people down there that, you know, there are people in the States who enable you to work, and that's where the money comes from. Sometimes it's churches, sometimes it's individuals, and they just go like, you know, they have a hard time really grasping that you mean somebody gave, you know, like $20,000 for the dorm, you know, and you tell them how many soles that is, it's like it doesn't register. But they sent thank yous to you, those that are supporting the Work-Study Scholarship, and you know, we could translate those for you sometime if you really want to, but they are very appreciative. This just shows some of the work going on the students did. That shows the second floor of the dorm. This shows just more work. This shows more work up on the second floor of the dorm. Another shot. It's the finished product until now. The upstairs rooms are not finished, but they could camp out during camps in January when people come from all over our area of Peru. They could use their sleeping bags and stuff, and it'd be great because there's a roof. And they would be very happy with that. They don't need a lot of luxury things. This just shows more students doing things on campus. This is the little apartment that we live in. Our little door would be right there. When we're not there, it gets used by all kinds of visiting people, and we're happy about that. This is a project that Wendy had the idea of, just some of the desks get looking pretty grungy, really. And so she had, and it's a project that boys and girls can do. Sometimes the girls, the brickwork, you know, they can't get involved in a lot of the physical labor. They just can't lift the stuff. And so we're always looking for things, especially Wendy, always looking for things for the girls to do, and this was one of them. And it was wonderful. It lasted a couple weeks, got all the furniture. It was just great. This is another thing, as I've kind of said to you, I think in Sunday school, that is near and dear to my heart. And, you know, if I come up with funds, then I just do my best to channel them to the work-study scholarship first, but then to books. And in the class of Revelation, I've gone to using this as our textbook. This is, of course, it's the Bible. But some of you may know Tim LaHaye's Prophecy Study Bible. If you do, then you know it's just full of kind of like unlimited information about prophecy. There's articles about the Great White Throne Judgment, the Bema Seat of Christ, just every, you know, there's a one-page article about all that. All the prophecy verses. In other words, it saves us a lot of time in class. If I want to compare the rapture to the second coming, then we can just find verses in it. We can go to a page, and it can show us the verses. We can go study those verses. So this book has been invaluable. This is Wilmington Study Guide to the Bible. Some of you may know this thick book. Sunday school teachers, I think, have been using for years. And it is just loaded with information. And it can be used by Sunday school teachers, Bible studies, pastors preparing sermons. And we use this in class, and they get to keep it. They get this as a graduation present. And they very much appreciate it. This is a new thing that we're doing. There's 80 churches in our area. There's 80 pastors in our little area of Utabamba. They probably go out a couple hours in a circle, and they have meetings every once in a while. The missionaries will, the pastors will come to the campus and have family camp or have pastors camp or kids camp. And one of the things that we've come up with, because the funds are available, is to give each of the pastors, or they pay a little bit, but it's almost like giving it to them, but they pay what they can afford, and we give them this. And if you're familiar with Wiersbe's B series, you know, he's got Be Diligent. Some of you may have, but he's got a B something from every book of the New Testament, and that's every one of them. And so it's really, really beneficial. And as we start to wrap things up, Wendy's very involved with the women's groups on campus, Awana, Bible study. She's always doing those with the kids. And we have quite a few kids on campus because of staff children. And that she's just showing some lesson that she's doing there. We do a lot of, like, bicycle. I like to ride my bike in Peru. And one of the things we do is we will take a bike trip from Utabamba to another city, like Ollantaytambo, whatever. It's probably about 20 miles away or 25 miles away. And when we get there, we have lunch, we pass out tracts, and that's what this represents. This is Shakira, and she's witnessing to some Peruvians in Ollantaytambo. And we like to do that. The students really like to do that kind of thing. Awana, as I mentioned, Wendy is involved with Awana. She gets down there and does her Awana thing. This is one of our students. They're very involved in Awana. We enjoy the social thing. At the end of well, the COVID thing kind of put us, but we used to have social activities at the end of every three-week modules, like that last Friday. Class was over yesterday. You know, they kind of go, whoosh, and we do things like this. This is a little extra special, and I think if you guys could see a little better over there, you would recognize this person, but I know you can't, because, and then there's another person back there. But anyways, our middle daughter came down to Peru, which was really, really very special. Her and her husband and the two grandsons came down, and they just saw the ministry and went to Machu Picchu, and we did all kinds of, you know, show them around things. One of the things that I scored a lot of points with the two grandsons, they were like 12 and 13, and was when they came into the apartment, I took them into their bed. I had a machete waiting for them, and so there's a machete waiting on the bed. And, you know, 12 and 13-year-old boys thought that was about as neat a thing as there was. But I had an ulterior motive besides being a, you know, a good grandpa and scoring points with the kids. Victor, he's kind of like the maintenance person on campus. He's really handy and he's very important to us. But he always needs help keeping the grass down. And so these guys spent a lot of time having fun with their machetes, but they were doing a lot of work for Victor. Now, I have this one for David, and can't remember how many years ago it was, Dave, but it was a blessing and a half. Douglas, if you remember Douglas, we exchanged some letters. Your Sunday school class provided, I think, a half a scholarship for him, which was, enabled Douglas to get through the seminary, and what an absolute blessing. I'm not saying your 250 or whatever it was made the difference, but Douglas... he was a shaker and a mover in Awana. He was, I think, what they call the student commander. Rachel was the commander, student commander. And Douglas married Racalita, a student. And they got married, and they have kids, and he's the pastor of a little church down in the jungle area on the way to Tim. And it's just pretty excited to see that unfold and to see them involved in ministry. And this church had a lot to do with Douglas. And that whole thing was a lot of fun. Okay, thank you for your time, your prayers and support. And there's one more picture of our students. And before I close with a word of prayer, if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to address them. Thanks so much for your time and listening. I hope it was the update that you were expecting. And it was a little selfish. I really enjoyed sharing with you about missions. It was really more for my benefit than yours probably. But missions is changing, and it's going a different direction. Now, what that means, I don't know exactly. I just know we got to keep getting the Word of God out there. And we've got to be mindful of the dynamics that are changed so that we can just be more effective for the Lord. Let's pray. Well, Lord, thank you for the time together, and thank you for their attention. And I just trust the time was edifying and things were said that you'd have said. Please continue to go before us, and may we have a rest of our day be God-honoring. In Jesus' name, amen.